good.
So, how's things? Big day. Just...
Huge, huge
Yeah.
day. I think it's a pretty big day for everyone in the creative industry, really, not just us.
I guess we should introduce you, James.
James Cuda, Savage Interactive, maker of the amazing Procreate.
Yeah, which is a brilliant painting app for the iPad. I gotta say, when I see an app like this, I get a little jealous because I want to have made it. It's good. It's real good. How did
Oh,
the
thank you very much.
well, screw you for making it. It's one of those apps that it feels very natural, and so it's almost kind of silly to ask about how it the impetus, how it came about. But when did the idea start to germinate?
I think, when we first saw the iPad, we kind of made a stand back then for, content creation on iPad. We didn't really know where that would go, but that was the kind of, the spark, trying to, can we use this little tablet to create, work that could be used in the industry? And from there, it kind of started to evolve to, well, there was no tech to actually draw and paint on iPad apart from the core graphic stuff. So we ended up kind of making our own tech to do that. We went through a couple of revisions, and then we landed on OpenGL, our current engine silica, which has been powering us for a couple of years now. So that's kind of all started back then on the original iPad.
I like that you bring up that you wanted to use the iPad for content creation because it should be remembered that back then there was some debate about that, right? Like
I know, right?
right? It's dumb. It's just really dumb. But the argument was that the iPad is for consumption rather than creation.
Oh, and I remember that debate. I remember a lot of people saying that it was essentially, it wasn't a Mac, it wasn't a phone. So it was this device that was neither good at any of these particular tasks. And certainly it was only for content creation. But I remember feeling at the time we were pretty silent because we were busy, of course, building Procreate at that point. But I remember feeling that it was absolutely wrong because it's got all the markings to make something with,
I'm a huge believer in the iPad paradigm. The first ones, though, were kind of limited in a way that a Mac isn't. Was that a bit of a setback? Was that a hurdle for you to sort of overcome?
Technically, the iPad was it was quite powerful for a tablet of its time. But yeah, it didn't have one of the major things that creators wanted, which was input. I remember a lot of people when they were talking about Procreate around about the iPad 2, where we were pumping out a little bit higher resolutions, and certainly we were quite natural and fast at painting. But a lot of creators would just say, it's cool, but I don't really want to use an iPad because there's no good input. I don't want to use it in my finger. And there's no real good comeback to that. So that was definitely one of the biggest hurdles and has been one of the biggest things around here internally. Because, we do a lot of work with a lot of third-party stylus guys. And, there's not really one good stylus there that we could really recommend. So if there was one crucial element that really held us back, it wasn't so much the iPad, but more the input method.
That's why I was so excited about the pencil. I'm actually happy that I wrote this and made it public because years ago I was arguing that what the iPad needed was a pencil. It's not a failure. Like that whole stylus thing, just don't bring it up because it's stupid. It's a dumb argument. It's a dumb
Right,
argument. The
right.
iPad
No
for
one wants video on an iPod.
no,
Exactly.
you need the stylus. And previously, like I think third party styluses were impractical because the device itself just didn't have the sensors to interact with them well.
Totally. It was more of a hack than anything else. I mean, these guys, I think, did a really admirable job of working around someone else's tech, essentially, and trying to kind of shoehorn a stylus in. And they were very popular amongst customers, and certainly a lot of Procreate users, you know, one of the hottest topics that they'll discuss is, what stylus do you use? You know, it's all about the stylus.
And that should tell you a lot about why Apple ended up doing a pencil, was that despite the limitations of the actual iPad, people were so desperate to try to use it with a stylus, a pencil device, that
totally
they would, you know, jump on sort of suboptimal solutions.
Yeah.
And iPad Pro today. Excited?
Yeah, it's all changed. Well, you know, I really think this is a change in the vector for certainly for creatives. I was reading some of the stuff that John was putting up, John Gruber, and, you know, he said in his review that, you know, visual artists are probably going to be, you know, flocking to these sort of things. And I think he's right, because this thing's cheaper than a PC. It's faster. I mean, certainly from what we've seen with developing for Procreate, it's probably as fast or faster than a MacBook.
Yeah.
But it's got better battery life and it's got a stylus. I mean, it's insane. It's literally the iPad of our dreams, but honestly, better.
Yeah, it seems bananas to me how much of an improvement this is over.
Yeah.
I spoke to John earlier this week. It outbenches a MacBook One, like the new MacBooks with the USB-C port.
Yeah.
When I walked into the Apple store today, I actually, when I was holding the iPad Pro, I heard the Intel processors crying. And I think the Core M wanted to jump off the table.
Those poor M1s.
To be fair, the iPad is not what a Mac is yet. These are very different products, I think.
Totally.
I mean, obviously, you develop on a Mac, and you can't do that on an iPad. So.
Yeah.
Currently, that's a problem. But this iPad Pro is amazing.
And the chip is built for this hardware. It's not like an Intel chip, which is powering all sorts of different devices.
Yeah. And, you know, it's more than just the chips. I mean, the chips themselves, the CPU is insane. The GPU is, you know, it's incredible. But it's more than chips, because you've got the screen itself, which can rev up to 240 hertz when you attach, you know, when you use it with a pencil. And then you've got the disk. I mean, the disk speed is insane. It's not just a little bit better than, you know, the iPad Air 2. It's monumentally faster. So, you know, loading, swapping, writing, it's pretty much like you've got an SSD strapped inside your iPad.
Yeah, better.
Yeah, the latest generation controllers, I think, they're using PCI now, and it's almost analogous to a MacBook controller.
Yeah, certainly, you know, when you're compiling for it, it just, you know, bam, it's loading on it. When you're using Procreate, swapping between, you know, loading layers, et cetera, it's one of the biggest improvements I think we've seen. And it's something that I don't think a lot of people are talking about at the moment, but the disk speed makes such a big improvement to the overall performance, because the accumulative effect of, you know, fast CPU, amazing GPU, 4 gigs of RAM, and this wicked fast disk it's iPad Pro, you know?
What's interesting is that this is just the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Like, I still think we're early on in the growth curve in terms of what these devices are going to start doing.
Worst iPad Pro Apple's ever going to make.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. That's pretty crazy. Has it changed your strategy at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly we had a roadmap for Procreate, and we're working on another product that we've been working on for a number of years, which shall remain nameless. And then suddenly this thing, and it's like, wow, that really changes the vector of where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
But in a very complementary way. So I don't think we expected Apple to go to this level. I mean, there was kind of rumors around the stylus and iPad Pro for quite some time, but the level that these things are punching at is completely unexpected, I think. And that certainly was a good curveball to deal with.
Yeah, and once you've been around, you learn that you hear rumors, but unless it actually ships, it doesn't count, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So now, without getting into not prying or getting into too many details. This changed the direction that your company is going to take. Was it along the same path, or have you sort of turned a corner?
It's accelerated the stuff that we're doing. So Procreate 3 is only really, you know, the tip of the iceberg. That's just the stuff that we could put together in time for the iPad Pro, because we really wanted to make sure that we're amongst the first out of the gates with not just compatibility, but really optimized for it. But over the next 12 months, there'll be some stuff that we're kind of accelerating, which is, to be honest, really exciting. Really,
that's
cool.
That's great. Yeah, super. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. And I like that distinction too. It's not just compatibility, but actually really leveraging the technology, because it's just, there's a distinction to that.
Yeah. And I mean,
because it's easy to phone something in, right? But when you actually really just take the time to sit down and design around the new capabilities, you can achieve way more interesting results.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what kind of caused us, I suppose, to replumb half of the Silica engine, because Apple have got these new two APIs, right? They've got the Coalesce touches and then Predictive Touch. And we really plumbed those deep within Silica so that we could really get the best performance out of that interaction.
So these,
not a small undertaking.
These were fascinating APIs to me when they were, because they were introduced in the open.
Yeah.
In the summer.
I know, right?
And I was like, well, that's weird.
Why? Oh, man. Around here, when we were watching the vid, you know, smiles were happening, discussions started, big debates erupted, because we're like, it's happening. It's this is probably happening, you know?
Yeah. I got super excited because they didn't make a big deal about it. But,
right.
But it was pretty cool. So the two APIs are the Coalesce Touches and Predictive. Coalesce Touches, I don't know, how would you describe that?
It's kind of what it says. It kind of groups them up, and then you can kind of, you know, use perhaps heuristics. It depends on what your engine does. But Predictive, I think, is the most interesting, because it's literally saying, well, along this path, we predict you're going here. So it tries to catch up and compensate for the screen tech that can't keep up with it. But even still, this screen is running at 240 hertz with crazy. Predictive Touch on top of it. It's still, you know, we were, in the end, we were using an iPhone 6S slow-mo to try and make sure that we were as close as possible to the pen, because we could no longer really see the differences anymore with the eye. And then it was pretty obvious, like, oh, man, we could do a lot more here and there. And we're still kind of working on that. There's still some stuff we're yet to show people.
So, I tried it at the event because I had Procreate was one of the apps that they had installed on the iPad Pro back in September. And as I want to do, I started drawing Batman immediately. And then I noticed that it was sort of filling in a little bit behind me. So I tried sort of those tricks you try to get ahead of the prediction and try to spoof it. And a couple times I managed to get away from it, but it caught up. Enough that I had to double check, like I had to try it again to make sure it was working well. It was so fast and so good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you're not looking for it, it feels that's one of the things, like Procreate 3 is good, and you know, the reviews that are starting to happen and customers talking about it, it's very nice. But as soon as you use Apple Pencil with this, it's like a completely different product. And there's no real way to articulate that other than just using it and feeling it, how nice it feels to, you know, to be creative in.
That's pretty remarkable. Just on the API level, because we're nerd show. you get the standard set of touches, but for each touch, you can ask for sort of the touches that the in between touches that contributed to them. So you have about double data points, right? Or about four data points per touch, effectively.
Yeah, and that translates into some interesting things in real world kind of events. Like, so for instance, when you're smudging with the Apple Pencil, it's literally got, you know, double the sample rate. So it's way more accurate and looks a ton better. And you use your finger, it's not as nice. It's just better with the pencil.
Yeah, that's amazing. And the predictive stuff. I feel that the predictive stuff is where they took it over the top. They didn't need to do that. I don't think that
it
seems
so
like
good.
Just a cherry on top of a pretty awesome Sunday. Because that allows you as the developer to sort of make a lot of choices and a lot of decisions ahead of time, which helps you be even more responsive and more natural.
Yeah. And it's something we're still, I don't think we've perfected yet. You know, in the early builds of Procreate 3, it, you know, the predictive touch stuff with Apple Pencil was working really well. But I still think there's more we can do to make it even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can perfect that. You know what I mean? It's going to be like making the perfect paintbrush at some point.
We want the stroke to stick to the end of the pencil. So we're going to be, you know, doing whatever we can to try and just, you know, get a few more pixels towards the pencil, and any gains are good as far as we're concerned, you know.
So a lot of that has to do with the painting engine itself.
Yes. That's something I think a lot of people, especially in the tech, don't realize that, you know, palm rejection and painting isn't just built in. It's not a button you press. It is certainly something you need to develop.
This is so high tech. This is high tech business. So can you talk me through sort of how the compositing engine works, the painting?
At what level would you like to know, I suppose? I mean, we use OpenGL to render everything, so we're really close to the GPU as possible.
Okay. I'm a pretty nerdy graphics guy, so context depth, 8 bits per pixel, I imagine, still?
Actually, we're using, I think, 16 bits, so we're a 64-bit painting engine.
Nice.
So you get a pretty good amount of color accuracy with that. But, of course, the screen, it all depends on the screen too, because most screens are not, you know, 10-bit or anything like that. It's all 8-bit, generally speaking. So,
not yet. But give them another, like, 3 months.
Yeah. Oh, man, that would be – I think one of the new iMacs, I think, was a 10-bit display.
Yeah, the new iMac is a 10-bit.
Oh, it's insane. Awesome. Yeah.
DCI-P3.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah. And you know that's going to come. That's going to be awesome. But you guys – so with your engine, not a problem because you just mix down to
– Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Which is great.
It's one of those things that we're just lucky by natural attrition to just get a boost in performance or in this case, you know, more fidelity because we built for OpenGL very early on with this amazing GPU inside this Pro. You kind of get those added benefits straight away with that with very little development time, which is really nice.
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly smart software choice is to build for the future.
Yeah, maybe lucky in our case. I don't know if we could predict it, you know, predict the future, but...
I like to make things as fast as possible, obviously.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
At the same time, if you can paint in a 64-bit canvas, that's probably the right choice to make because ultimately, the devices are going to start getting
higher fidelity,
right?
It does future-proof you to a certain level. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you build for great, you get future-proofing.
It's a trade-off between like how fast can we go versus if you start building for yesterday's hardware, you're going to have yesterday's app.
And totally.
Can't sell yesterday's app.
Yeah.
Especially when you show up on the scene with something awesome.
Take a quick break so I can tell you about Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of a price. The mattress industry has inherently forced us into paying notoriously high markups. Casper is revolutionizing the industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly onto us, onto the customers. They provide resilient mattresses, long-lasting, supportive mattresses, and they do it by using a new kind of hybrid material that combines premium latex foam with memory foam. It really is the best of both worlds. Now, premium mattresses can often cost like $1,500 or more, but Casper mattresses cost between $500 for twin, $600 for twin XL, $750 for full-sized, $850 for queen-size, $950 for king-size. It really is a great deal. So buying Casper mattress is also completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and returns in the 100-day period. It's that simple. Statistically, lying on a bed for 4 minutes in a showroom has no correlation to whether the bed is right for you. That's why Casper has turned the buying process into a risk-free experience. They want you to take your time with it, 100 days, sleep on it, use it in your actual life the way that you would really use a mattress and make sure that it's really for you. They're obsessively engineered. They're shockingly well-priced. They have just the right sink, just the right balance. I've
been using one for over a year, maybe a year and a half now, and it really provides support, but not too much support so you're uncomfortable, but it's not so soft that you have to stay tense all night just to support your own body weight. It really is a really good balance. And because it's risk-free, because of their return policy, again, you can try it for 100 days and make sure for yourself. The mattresses are made in America, and we have a special offer for Debug listeners. You get $50 towards any mattress purchased by visiting casper.com/debug and using the code debug. That's it. Just go to casper.com/debug, use the code debug, and you can start your 100-day trial with Casper right now. Thank you so much.
So OpenGL has fixed texture sizes and all that. Does that limit the size of your canvas?
Yeah. Essentially, you've got two things that hold us back as far as resolution. So you've got the texture size itself, which is set via, you know, pretty much an OS level. And then you've got RAM. So the more RAM, the more we can do. So with the iPad Pro, again, 4 gigs of RAM, it's amazing. And with iOS 9, they've allowed the texture barrier to go beyond 4K. So now we're going 16K in one direction. I mean, 16K on an iPad.
I had missed that. I thought it was still limited to 4K.
No. It's right now, if you've got a Pad Pro, you can go in and make a 16K dot.
You guys are laughing. No.
yes, we are.
Okay. Do you use any additional OpenGL buffers?
To be honest, I don't know. I couldn't answer that. So Lloyd, our chief engineer here, he's almost obsessed with performance, obsessed with GL. And he'd probably be able to give you a better answer, but certainly from our perspective, just being able to break that 4K barrier by natural attrition of iOS, pretty much thanks to Apple. So you know, thank you Apple for giving us everything we need to just pretty much unlock, the power of those devices.
So, you sound excited, and it sounds like the future looks bright for you guys. In terms of addressing the marketplace, I looked at it earlier today, and your app is what, $6?
Correct. Yeah.
Should it not be $60?
Well, you know, this is a really interesting point because this is a topic that's been discussed, you know, internally for a long time. Because at what point do we stop being essentially a large iPhone app as far as the market's concerned, and a real productivity, high-end performance app as far as mindshare goes.
Yeah.
And I think half of the problem is actually the price point itself, because $5 is there's not a lot of value in that as far as the perceived value of the product. But at the same token, the market is used to paying these incredibly low prices because iPad apps in the past have just been, generally speaking, larger, you know, iPhone apps. So your iPad, which is generally, you know, the whole universal binary thing. But now we have the iPad Pro, and we've got products like Procreate and new products like UMake, I think, which is charging like $149 to unlock the product. But it's an amazing product. If you haven't seen it yet, it's this really cool 3D drawing app. So I think there's definitely a change happening. And I think, you know, certainly Panic were talking about it a few months ago that there's not much revenue to be had in iOS comparatively to the Mac. And it's largely due to that whole, you know, iPad is simply just a big iPhone app. But I think this will probably be the last version of Procreate that we're going to charge $6 for because of two reasons. Yeah. One, it's just not sustainable to continue that kind of progress with not being essentially compensated for your work. And two, I think it actually gives more value to the product. You know, your users, they feel like, you know, they're going to want to purchase the product, they're going to want to support it, as opposed to just a throwaway product. Mm-hmm. And certainly not how we see Procreate, you know. So no, definitely, I think, there's a change happening.
This is a brilliant app. This app is, to me, not a $5. I said $6 because I'm Canadian, so you get Canada tax. But this is not, to me, a $5 app at all. So I'm heartened to hear that. And one of the things that we are concerned about, and when I see we, you know, developers in general are concerned about with the iPad Pro, is that this is a device that is incredibly formidable. And to write software that can actually make the best use of it, it's going to take some time and effort, research and development. And you can't do that in, you know, for $5 a pop in lower numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally right. I mean, the market share, certainly for iOS, you're going for volume. So when you make an iPhone app, that's a very singular sort of oriented task. You're just going for volume. So, of course, it makes sense to have that lower price point. Mm-hmm. But when you're going into, you know, the high-end performance market, creativity apps, video editing apps, that sort of, you know, high-end productivity, your market share is inherently smaller. So, therefore, your price should go up to also reflect that. So there's I hope that we're not going to be alone next year when we figure out what is the correct price point and what is the correct way. Mm-hmm. Because I think it can really make a sustainable industry.
Well, one of the things that kind of concerns me is that you may well end up being alone one way or the other, in that a lot of people may just go out of business. Like,
this is true. Yeah.
If you can't make money, you got to do something else, really.
Yeah. So,
kind of a bummer.
Well, it's quite heartening to see like Omni, who's still holding the line with, I think, $50, $40, and $30 apps.
Yeah.
I mean, Omni is always to be admired. They have been for like 20
years. Totally. Yep.
They do amazing work. Like you said, panic. There are some stalwarts there. That, like
James Thompson, $10 for Peacock.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peacock only on your TV is hilarious, by the way.
It is. It's phenomenal.
It's a good app, but I love that it's on TV. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it's mental.
It's too funny. But yeah, there are some good apps out there at good prices. But it's hard, and I think you guys did a great job in that, you know, you got on the iPad early and you kept building.
Yeah.
But I don't think I don't think you can go from 0 to 60 with an app like Procreate today.
You're totally right. Yeah, like, I think you're totally right.
Which works in your favor, which is great because you happen to have a good app, but it also freezes out a bunch of other, you know, not competitive apps, but comparable apps in terms of their functionality.
Yeah, certainly we got a head start, and I think that's something we don't want to waste. Because it's something that'll never happen again. You know.
Well, you going to do Procreate on the TV?
We've been asked that, and yet no.
Have you? Somebody asked it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had
people
we've
ask
had requests.
Things.
I may or may not have AirPlay mirrored Procreate to my television in the past.
That's cool. No, that's cool.
That's cool.
That's something we should really – we talked about actually enhancing that so you could actually use your TV as a second screen or your Mac as a second screen. That's kind of a cool idea. I like that.
Yeah.
But painting with the Apple remote, nah, no, don't want to do that.
Yeah. How do you like the TV?
It's awesome. It's really cool. Just, you know, on a personal level.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. I bought it for my wife and I, and we've been using it. It's awesome. I love the tiny little details that Apple have put into the UI. Being a designer, those are the sort of things I really admire. So, you know, when you can kind of roll around on that little kind of touchpad and the content squares will kind of move with you. It's just little details like that. I go, God, that's just so Apple. It's so nice to see that.
Yeah,
you know?
They did a great job. I think that shine is a little too bright.
Yeah. it's a bit over the top. Yeah.
It's a bit over the top. It's the pinstripes. Yeah. They're going to tone that one down, I promise you.
Yeah, same with the shadows that are going on. The design metaphor is somewhat iOS. Yeah. You know, 7, 8, 9, but they are taking it into an interesting direction. But like Apple, they'll always just refine things. I certainly like the direction it's going in, you know, because skeuomorphism, there was this whole thing of like, let's kill it, burn it with fire a few years ago. But, you know, it's a tool in a designer's toolbox that should be used where appropriate. The problem was it was just getting overused for years. Yeah. So it's nice to see a little bit of skeuomorphism just sneak their way back with some, you know, some depth in that interface, et cetera.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, whenever you hear anybody want to kill something with fire, it's not the thing that they want to kill. It's the problem. It's like, would you just put the pitchforks down? Like,
that's stop. Right.
Slow down a minute. Think about what you're saying.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm excited for the Apple TV. And I'm excited for the app scene on the Apple TV.
I know, right? And the price points are different on there too. So obviously That's a very interesting point, because obviously they believe that consumers are more willing to pay those prices, those more sort of console-y kind of prices.
Well, that's how the iPhone started out too, so we'll see.
$10 for Super Monkey Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I hope that I guess the fair way to say it is that I don't hope that apps are priced high. I just hope that there's a sustainable economy built around writing software. Like, I don't want people to pay $10 for apps, but I also want to be able to write software for different platforms.
That's complicated, because you look at a company like Microsoft, and they're essentially giving away Office for free on mobile now. And they're doing it to support other things, and they can afford to do it. And then you have apps that are VC funded that just want users, so they don't care about making profit on the apps. And I think some people just look at downward pressure as people price their apps low, but there's a lot of different kinds of downward price pressure.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. People get that money in weird ways. And my understanding is that Adobe does not make that much money on their iOS offerings.
Although the new ones are the new ones tied to Creative Cloud, because they've got CC in the name. And
yeah. So when you, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's really interesting, because when you boot it up, you just greeted with this login page, so you can't even use the product. You kind of got to go, oh, right. I mean, it's cool for if you're a CC subscriber like I am, I can log in, and it's very good. But it's an interesting way to go about things, because I think there's probably a lot of consumers out there who probably just go, I don't have an account, and I probably am not going to get one because I don't need all that stuff. So interesting strategy.
Is that sounds like it could work out well for you. Well, it's weird, right? I mean, in a way, they're free, and in a way, they're just—it's a hassle because you have to go sign up for something. So maybe it works out.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think Adobe view mobile as something very different to how we view mobile. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, they see it definitely as an adjunct to the desktop offering, because that's their main offering. So anything to complement that and to add value to CC, I think, is what they're trying to do. Whereas we're completely different. We see value in, high performance product, one-off sort of price experience sort of thing. So it's a different strategy that they're going for.
Do you guys ever debate porting to the Mac?
Oh, all the time. If you look on our forums, one of the highest requested feature is Procreate for desktop, which invariably means Mac. Most of the debate has been centered around developing Procreate for Mac. And it's really interesting, and we're still really considering the Mac, because as much as the iPad heralds a new curve, it's not the end of the desktop. I think it was Steve who said once that when America was largely an agricultural society, that everyone used trucks, and as the economy changed, more people used cars, but it didn't mean trucks disappeared. And I think it's still true, because I think desktops will still be around, but they'll probably be used in very different ways, for high-end graphical tasks or intensive computational stuff. You're probably going to want a desktop, or a bigger screen, you're probably going to want a desktop. So it's still very interesting to think about how that might work.
So that's a non-answer. not really. So that sounds like being a jerk, but it is interesting.
It's very interesting.
One of the reasons I asked was because the pricing structure for apps on the Mac is very different than other platforms like iOS. So despite the lower numbers, the Mac still seems to me to be the place where you can charge like a premium price and for lack of a better word, like run an honest business, right? Like sell your app. Yeah. Like, here's my thing. Thanks for your money. And here's some support.
Yeah. It's totally true. I don't know the reason, but at a guess, I'd say because Mac users are probably going to be willing to pay a higher price for value. They bought a Mac. They probably want to have a decent experience, so they're willing to pay a decent price point for something that's going to work reasonably well. Whereas an iOS market, it's just so broad. It's just such a big diverse market. And you know, cheap is sexy at the moment.
I think there's also, like, I remember when I first had the Palm Trio, it was $30 or $40 for the yellow sticky note app, which crashed most of the time.
Wow.
Anyway, and I think what happened, I think it's kind of unique because on the Mac and on Windows, that was just like, we have this whole evolution in history and culture of paying for software and things like shareware and things like upgrades. And when iOS came out, it was great because you could get apps on your phone and it was a centralized market in the App Store, but there was no way to demo stuff. So it was immediately, well, I can't buy all these $10 apps. How do I know which one to buy? Because if I buy it, I'm committing $10. It's almost like sight unseen. It's as is. And people are risk adverse. They didn't want to spend that. And then developers saw they didn't want to spend it. So they're like, well, we'll do a sale. And then people started going, oh, they're going to do a sale. Then I'm never going to spend full price. I'm just going to wait for the sale. And then developers like, oh, well, then I can't increase the price. I have to leave it here. And so it's almost like this, and I've called it before, it's like the sum of all compromises, because Apple built the App Store the way it is. People reacted to what that is. And it's just sort of the worst of all learned behavior has resulted in free or really cheap apps.
Yeah, a very good description, to be honest. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how you fix that, because sometimes people just want to blame Apple. But at the same time, again, if Apple did provide upgrades and they did provide trials, you'd still have to compete with venture capitalists who are offering free apps, or big companies like Microsoft who are offering free apps, and that would still have pressure on the price.
Yeah. To me, there's a lot of things that Apple could do, but ultimately you can't blame Apple for the state of the App Store. People made the choices to charge less money.
We're all complicit, Guy.
Yeah, this is true. And it's also up to the consumer as well. There is a lot of emphasis on the consumer to, you know, do a little bit of research and, you know, pick which one might work for you.
Yeah. So as the iPad, we've talked about the performance and capabilities of the iPad Pro. As it starts to converge with the Mac, how do you see the two environments sort of starting to interact? Not necessarily technically, but from like market dynamics.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the Pro will certainly overlap a larger segment. You know, when you talk about the generalist PC, the iPad Pro is pretty bloody capable. It's very likely that it's going to start eating into a little bit of that, MacBook kind of range. And I think that's probably going to, be honest, probably going to happen more and more as these things become more and more capable. I think the really interesting thing is the next generation. So, for instance, you know, my children, they are not really interested in desktops. They just like hitting the buttons and, you know, mucking around with apps. But the main thing they like to do is that they're like, they need an iPad. It's like crack to them, you know, whenever they need to go and chill out, they want that iPad. And that interaction model is something that's going to be very familiar, very ingrained to them. And I think as this generation grows older, the curve is going to be definitely towards these mobile devices. I think they're going to look back at what we were using as the desktop and see it as quite arcane. And, you know, the mobile computer, that's just the way things are. Mm-hmm. I think more and more, that's just the way it's going to go.
Take a quick break so I can tell you about Backblaze. Backblaze is online backup. It's something that a lot of people don't think about. They have a copy of everything on their computer and they just think it's always going to be there and it's always going to be reliable. And that's just not the case. And often it disappears right when you need it the most. There's corruption, or you drop it, or it gets stolen, or you spill a drink on it, or something else happens. And yet maybe you have a local backup. Maybe you've got a hard drive that you plug into it and make a backup every now and then. Maybe you have a time capsule. But the hard drives in those can fail too. And you think, well, the odds of two things failing at the same time is not very, it is high enough. It has happened to me. So what you really want is you want your data on your machine. You want a local backup and you want a backup on the internet. And I'm not talking about, you know, just some sync service that you might use. You want a bit-for-bit copy of everything on your machine up on the internet that you can restore. That if you had to start fresh on a brand new machine, you could put everything back just exactly the way that you had it. And you won't realize, again, how important that is until you really need it. But it is the definition of digital life saving. So Backblaze has 150 petabytes of data backed up. They've restored over 10 billion files for customers. So if there's a flood, if there's a fire, if there's a theft, if there's any other sort of problem, you can just get that data back. And it's not entirely just about backup either, because if you're traveling and you need a file, you can get it from Backblaze as well. And they have iPhone and Android apps, so you can even get those
files on your mobile device. You left home with that presentation on your computer. You really need it on your mobile. It's not in any directory that automatically syncs. But yeah, it's in Backblaze. You can just go and get it. You can restore one file or all your files. You can do it through the web. 25% of all restores are just one file, and that sometimes can be the only file you need. Or it could be your entire photo library. It could be all your tax documents. It really does scale to protect your digital life. And if you have a ton of stuff and you don't think it's realistic to download at all, you can get a USB hard drive with everything on it shipped right to you. It's founded by ex-Apple engineers. It runs natively on the Mac and on Windows. There's no add-ons, no gimmicks. There's no upsell. There's just one charge, $5 a month per computer, unlimited, unthrottled backup. It's everything. And I mean that in terms of all your backups, but also it's so important. It really is everything. And if you're already using it, the holiday season is coming up. Think about giving it to a friend. They're really, it will be the gift that they will mean the most to them at some point in their lives. So stop putting it off. Start getting backed up. Go to backblaze.com. Risk-free, no credit card required trial. Again, just go to backblaze.com. You will not regret it. Thanks, Backblaze.
Can you work on an iPad or an iPad Pro? Like you,
I think it depends.
I mean, you have a business to run, right? Like, can you do most of that on your iPad? And do you, or do you choose to use the Mac?
Well, personally, as a designer, there's not software there that can help me design stuff.
Right.
If you take that part out, yeah, everything else totally, totally possible. And for most people, I think it's probably more capable than what they need. I mean, PCs were already probably, faster than what most people were actually using. And I think the same is true for the iPad Pro. Right.
Well, that's very true. I think, what's the active life of like a Mac, like a laptop? Is like 3 to 5 years,
yep.
Renee, something like that. So guess what? Your iPads have been in that range for quite a while now.
Yeah. Someone was saying the iPad 2 is still one of the most popular iPads.
Yeah,
that's true.
People bought them and they were just happy with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, you guys must hate the iPad 3.
Yes, we do, Guy. We hate it with a passion.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Just for the audience, is that the first Retina one? That was the Retina.
It was the A5X, right?
Way underpowered. Oh god.
Yeah.
It was running on red the entire time.
Yeah, totally. We were getting memory warnings pretty heavily. And then, of course, when iOS 7 came out, where iOS used just a little bit more RAM, bam, we were just getting jettisoned all the time on that 3. Yeah.
Jetson is such a jerk.
I don't understand. I just don't understand that one.
No, it's a bad metaphor, isn't it?
It barely crawled across the finish line, that one. I don't know what that
And it got replaced in 6 months. It was the closest an Apple device has ever gotten to being benched.
Yeah, that's true, a good way of putting it. Yeah, thank God.
Sorry, your time is done.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was like no memory, tons of pixels, poor performing, just bad news.
Yeah.
It's interesting though, because they didn't put out the iPad Air 3 this year. It's sort of like the iPad is something where they're playing around with more. They did one 6 months later, then they were back on their yearly cycle, and now it looks like they might do an 18-month cycle. So it's like there's more elasticity.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But they put out the Mini 4, which was very interesting.
Which is a great machine because it's finally got the full sRGB color gamut, and it's just very nice now. High density screen.
Annual cycles are tough to keep up with. James, do you have like a – do you plan your app releases accordingly or you do? Okay.
Yeah. Our entire roadmap is built around the product cycles.
Yeah. Is that tough? Yeah. That's got to be tough.
It's tough for a small company, yeah. For a small company,
how many people
are you? At the moment, we've got 6 of us now, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're very small, intentionally so. I mean, it's a funny thing because we've had a lot of...
No, 6 people is... That's great. Like,
oh, thanks, mate.
That's a team.
No, yeah.
It is,
you hired a bunch of people, that's a good company.
It's a nice little company. The interesting thing is because, VCs are, of course, very interested in what we're doing. So there's always this kind of allure of, wow, we could really get a good injection of capital. But the freedom that we get with staying private and doing a slow burn is just so much more appealing for us. Yeah.
Well, it's terrific that you've been able to do that. I mean, sort of the flip side of the coin. We were just complaining about the App Store economics, but I mean, ultimately, you've managed to build a small company out of that, which is terrific. Like, that's super commendable.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, man. Yeah.
And yet, keeping up with the yearly schedule, that's tough because, and I've said that many, many times, you don't get a year. You get
no. This is right.
You get maybe 6 months with like
maybe. Yeah, that's right. And there's always the curveballs at Dub where you know they'll be like, "Oh, Swift, what? Okay, let's go." You know, and suddenly there's this thing happening with Swift, and yeah. But to be honest, I really, really love it. I really love the pace. I really love how it's just it's a very dynamic is one word to put it, but yeah, you know, it's something that I suppose because you've got so much variance. It's just always interesting.
I like that you've dynamic rather than chaotic, but that's good. It's a positive attitude. So what does a year look like for you? Let's say we get are you focused primarily on the iPad?
Yeah. So we made Procreate Pocket, which is it's kind of like a little version of it, but the poor Pocket update, it got missed this year talking about yearly schedules. Because iPad Pro. So we were kind of like, well, what do we do? We have to throw resources behind one of these things. And it was not really a choice. Everyone, of course, voted straight away Pro.
Good choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
So I suppose the start line, it seems like October view, right? The iPad will come out. Your app is released-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, around that date.
Yeah, and then you start planning. But then halfway through the year, Apple throws a curveball at you and hits you in the head, and then you need to change your plans.
They flip the table, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
But what we have, of course, really long goals that you know, they're because they're long, they're okay to bench sometimes, then bring back. Mm. And then you've, of course, got the immediate goals that you need to get. And it's that balance of important – not urgent versus urgent, not important. And it's that constant balance, I suppose, throughout the year and then dealing with the curveball at Dub.
Yeah, that's a great distinction. And I suppose Dub gives you because they don't always have groundbreaking news for an app of the style that you guys create. They didn't mention anything about an iPad Pro at Dub. And you had to be paying careful attention to get the new high fidelity input, touch input stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You had to literally dig down deep into the vids or, of course, attend one of the sessions to kind of put the dots together there and go, oh, there's something happening with the stylus. You have to be with these APIs.
You kind of left metal on the side for now, too.
Yeah.
Do you want to address that?
Metal is something that we're really interested in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just as an example of it's something that comes out of the middle of nowhere and you've got your OpenGL engine, if you've got your plans and you have to, as a company, assess, well, this is really cool. Are there advantages? Are there negatives? Can we stay with what we have? Do we have to do this?
So
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to not put you on the spot, like my take on metal has been that, let me figure out a way to phrase this properly. If it is an advantage to you, if you know exactly how you're limited in drawing, then metal can be a big help. That often comes with if you're submitting a lot of draw calls in particularly 3D kind of game. That said, OpenGL is a perfectly viable API, and you can continue to use it, especially in cases where it you're not doing a tremendous number of draw calls. And one of the things that sort of bugs me often about Apple enthusiasts or technology enthusiasts is that they will be presented with a new technology and then demand everybody move to a new technology when they don't particularly understand the trade-offs.
Yeah.
Like the gains don't necessarily, just because you know the name of something doesn't mean that the gains are going to be there. Like it's, it doesn't work like that.
That's brilliant.
Sure. Yeah. And I sound like I'm coming to your defense and I like you have a no comment comment. Fine. Good. I don't think people should be clamoring because guess what? It's not going to change the world that much. That said, interesting technology and I think it's great and it's, clearly, they're telegraphing the way they want things to go. I just don't think that it's the be all and end all. I am more excited for the higher fidelity input with regards to your app than I am about Metal.
Yeah. I mean, Metal definitely does herald, I suppose, the next kind of thing. But you're right. OpenGL is completely viable. And a lot of people will just... You know, I remember when Metal first came out, everyone was screaming at us, you know, well, you've got to rewrite program in Metal. And we were like, well, you know.
No, you don't.
Apple didn't really rewrite iOS 9 in Swift.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But what Metal can do is it does, you know, just from a strategic point of view, it does speed up a lot of development time.
Yeah.
So that's what's really interesting with Metal from our point of view.
Yeah, I think it's great. But, I mean, ultimately, we were just discussing how – like the rendering keeps up with the pen tip.
Yeah.
And that you had to record it in slow-mo in order to be able to figure out how close it was. What more do you want? like how much more faster do you, you know, and I think it's a marginal gain at this point. I mean, I think down the road it'll be great, but I don't think that people should be clamoring for something that they don't actually think they understand the benefits of. That's all.
Yeah. I think the main thing is for developers, it's faster in a lot of ways. And I suppose that's a big benefit. But consumers probably don't realize that as far as performance goes, there's a lot more to it than a one-liner or a one-word.
Oh, yeah, that's precisely it. It's not a panacea in any way.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Awesome. Don't get me wrong. I'm excited about that. The API is clean. The OpenGL has – I'm a big OpenGL fan, but, I mean, it's accumulated more than its fair amount of cruft over the years.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, Metal presents like a new reboot.
Yeah.
So with Metal in mind or OpenGL in mind, do you ever consider porting to other platforms? Like – in a way, I suppose it's, since you're a tablet, I don't want to call you a tablet company, but it seems that your primary target is a tablet, right?
Yeah.
And there's kind of no other game in town.
You know, we had a lot of interest from Samsung, HTC, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, trying to woo us over to other platforms, Microsoft for Windows. And that's flattering. It's very flattering. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, there's two things. A, we actually really like Apple hardware as a development kind of platform. It's very nice to develop on. It's very easy to develop on, and we quite like the actual the actual hardware we use. The second thing is that for a very small company to branch out into multiple platforms, it becomes incredibly strenuous as far as financially, because for instance on Android, the fragmentation is just off the charts. So to really keep the same level of quality that we can maintain on iOS, it's near impossible on other platforms. So as much as we'd like everyone to use Procreate, we're not going to compromise, I suppose, the experience of using it. And right now, Apple are just firing on all cylinders. So they're the only guys we want to partner with right now. At least for the foreseeable future, especially now with the iPad Pro. I mean, this is for us. It's the change of the vector. You know, this is on a whole new direction now.
So as a, I guess the broadest question I could ask is, where do you see things going? You guys have been in this game 6 years now.
4 years, I think.
4 years.
Four or 5 years. Yeah, yeah. Something like that.
Well, you look old for your. I don't even know
his avatar on Skype is Optimus Prime, if anyone's wondering.
I don't know. I thought you'd been around for longer. Well, let's. You have a big impact. Okay, let's
Yeah.
You're not old, you're impactful.
So the next four or five years, what do you expect to happen? Because you're a smart guy. I don't think you could have expected the position that you're in now when you started, right?
Totally right. To be essentially one of the leaders in this, you know, little industry that's mm-hmm. that's forming is a privilege, but it's also a lot of responsibility. And one thing that's certainly going to happen now is we're going to get inundated with competitors, no doubt about it. As far as, you know, the iPad Pro, there's going to be a lot of developers out there, small and large, who are suddenly going to see what we've seen all these years, that iPad is a insanely good platform to be creative on. So I think competitors are going to start coming at us hard and fast. But of course, we have a lot of plans that we're going to be doing, because one thing we don't want to do is focus on the competition too much. We have to, you know, of course, acknowledge that the landscape is going to change. I think certainly iPad Pro is going to get a lot of traction, and that's going to bring interest in from a lot of parties who are going to bring other creative tools in. And that's great for the consumer. What we're really going to focus on is solving problems. I think that's one of the biggest things that we've been doing internally. We really get a kick out of solving stuff. And that's the culture we have here. So definitely the plans we have lined up for the next 18 months, solve some really cool problems. And I think people should be really receptive to that. Or at least we hope so. We'll find out.
That's great. I love that. That's an amazing attitude. Well, I think people forget that application means like applying the technology of the device in order to solve a problem a lot. And you get wrapped up with like different features and all that. But I think focusing, like you're keeping your eye on the ball, which is basically solve problems.
Mm.
Like address people's needs. Keep it on software.
Yeah. But it's also fun. It's really fun. I mean, you look at QuickLine, which is a very it's a very small feature in Procreate 3. But for us, it's one of those really satisfactory things, because the problem was, how do you draw a straight line? And so it's such a small question, right? You know, it should be easy. But we went through, I think, about a year's worth of discussion. We had ruler tools built. We had vector tools. We had all these crazy things that had been done, but nothing just solved the problem of saying, well, we're a freehand drawing app. How do you just create a straight line without bringing in another tool? You know, surely this
can
be
done. Apple ruler.
Yeah, right. The Apple ruler. And the thing is, we made something very similar to the Apple ruler. The problem is that you have to bring it in as a separate thing. So it breaks that flow. And then it's kind of an analog to something that you're used to in the real world, but it's not truly a digital way of doing things. So I remember the heated discussions in here going on and on and on, and all these complicated methods were like, we're just trying to make a line. Surely we can just make a line. And then it was so simple. Just hold at the end of a stroke and you'll straighten the stroke. And that way you don't have to change your tools, bring in other things. It seems so simple now, but and it's not one of those really, really fancy headline things that you can put up for marketing. But it's one of those little details, I think, that just makes our job so worthwhile when you see artists use it and their face light up. They're like, oh, that's... Yes! Wow!
That's awesome. Only that guy. Yeah. It's that Johnny Ive thing about inevitability. Is once you spend all the work and effort to come to a simple solution, it just feels like the right one.
Yes, totally. Yeah, and it's something you can really be proud of. That you know we've done the hard yards. This is a very nice.
It's built on top of bodies.
Yeah. That's right.
No, I'm glad you called that out. I love that kind of thing. In Napkin, we try not to have any tools. That's the guiding principle, is that we don't have any tools. It's just pure direct interaction. And that
on
has
a Mac
caused
app,
us,
we should say, for people who are on a Mac Napkin, app. Which is amazing. Yeah.
That has caused us so much. We did so much work trying to figure out how to have a toolless Mac app, because of course you just fall back to like using different tools and loops and selection rectangles and all that. That's what you do. But we busted our heads trying to get an interaction model that felt similar, like a Mac app, but you know, was toolless, because that mode contexting, the mode switching, context switching is something we didn't want anything to do with. We wanted to just make it fast. And that's I really appreciated those kind of little touches that you guys put your heads towards, because that's not easy to do. Because it often it conflicts with something else you want to do, and then you need to work
it out. Totally. Yes. Yeah. 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 You know all about it.
Yeah. Well, it always seems like when you do it right, which you guys have done, like you said, Renee, it seems obvious. And it's not. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears behind making those weird little tiny decisions that nobody ever cares about.
Yeah. But the cumulative, I suppose, the cumulative effect of using this thing where you just go, man, it feels good. It's that abstract feeling. And that's, I suppose, that little intangible benefit of a product that, again, you can't put a marketing slogan on, but people feel it when they use a product.
It's delightful. It makes you smile when it happens.
Yeah.
I've actually texted a guy and I'm saying, like, I just moved an image and it kind of picked up and flew over and it was the most amazing thing ever. And he kind of probably rolled his eyes at me. But it makes your day.
Yes. You still can't put it in your app store blurb, though. Feels kind of good.
This app will make you smile.
Yeah. Yeah. Procreate will make you feel good. I'm sure that nothing will go wrong with that heading.
you do a ton of stuff. Like, I remember one of the first times I spoke with you, I'd been using a lot of drawing apps, and I was like, I can make a line, but I can't adjust it, and I want to adjust the size of this line, and I use Procreate. And everything that I wanted to control was right there, and you're continuing that now because you have the pencil brush variables, and you can control the pressure, the tilt, the azimuth, all these different elements so that you can – because it's a great tool, but no great tool will ever be great for everybody, and you can make a few tweaks and really nail it for your own personal taste.
Yeah, and that's why we built the pressure curve in there as well, because the each brush can be set for azimuth, tilt, pressure, etc. But there's an overall curve as well that you can adjust to really tailor the you know how you draw and paint.
So great.
How much?
Yeah.
How much input from outside artists do you take?
Quite a lot, but yeah. I remember one. One artist said to us on our boards when people were requesting features, said, well, it doesn't matter what we think because in the end, Savage will just do what they want anyway. And it made us all kind of laugh. But what he was trying to say was, I suppose, how we operate. We listen and ask a lot of questions to our audience and we try and solve their problem. But it's probably not the way they expected us to solve it.
Right.
And I think that's the big difference, because they'll want something, for instance, like to draw a straight line or in an example of our new perspective tool to get correct perspectives. They wanted us to do it a certain way, but it's not because we're trying to annoy people. It's just simply because we want to solve it as best we can. So it's inevitably different to what they want.
Yeah. Is that hard to communicate? Because that's a bit of that's kind of the trick, right? It's like you listen to people, you ignore what they actually tell you the answer should be.
Yeah.
Like, add another menu that does this and you try to figure out what they're actually trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And if you can do that in a way that's broader or that addresses 10 people's needs rather than 10 individual, you can add 10 individual features that'll address 10 people's needs, or you can try to figure out the one thing that will fix, you know, 20 people's concerns.
That's always the challenge of customer support, is that people describe solutions they want instead of problems they have.
Totally right, Renee. That is one of the that is really the problem in a nutshell, because they don't understand the kernel of the problem. They're not looking at the core. They're just looking at the effect that they're having, that the problem's having on them. But look, I think it's lovely that we have, in the 21st century, we have customers that are just literally, attached to us digitally, that we can ask questions to and hear their feedback. It's a lovely relationship to have with the customer. And we really, I think a lot of people say they listen to the customers, et cetera. We really try and listen to try and make them happy, because at the end of the day, we're not going to have this lovely party of making Procreate without those guys.
Right.
So it's so important to listen to what they say. Deal with it. Sorry.
How do you drive people, or how do you get your customers to involved in the forums? Because one of the classic complaints with the iOS App Store is that Apple intermediates relationships, and so people sort of have to find and discover the developer. Do you do anything specific to get people involved?
Social is where we really have put a lot of effort into. So we try and reach people through Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, all those sort of angles, and then try and bring them in as customers and try and say, you know, you can talk to us. We're going to listen. If you have a problem, we're going to try and solve it for you. So it's just that day-to-day support that we put in every day. We've got a guy here, Matt, who manages our support. And on our website, you know, we actually say, contact Matt. He's a real person with a face. You know,
you can
talk to him. Yeah.
I kind of want to steal that idea.
Contact Thomas.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is I would steal it and still just use Matt's face.
Brilliant. I'm sure he'll be flattered.
Everybody should just have Matt on the website.
Just Matt.
Matt as a service.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, having a human face, I think that's incredibly important.
Yeah, but it's so true. Like on the App Store, people often use the App Store, and I'm sure, you know, we've all had this discussion, but they use the App Store as a form of support where they jump on and go, look, the app's really good, but I wish you could do that, and I can't do X, so one star. And you're like, well, that's not really helpful to other customers. It's not really helpful for developers. Mm-hmm. So that's a very hard one to work around.
I think you may find that your low price point opens you up to more of that weird criticism.
That's true. Yep. I completely agree. Again, you've got that broad consumer base who there's no value in that $5 product. So they're happy to treat it as if it has no value.
Yeah, which is a shame, but it's not really their fault, I guess, because
exactly.
What do they know? You know, so.
Yeah.
Sorry, that sounds incredibly dismissive. What do they know? They know they spent $5 and they're not happy. That's what they know. But they don't know what goes into making an app like that. So
no, that's right. As far as the real world concerned, we're a little bit higher than a cup of coffee that you would order in the morning. So surely that's not, you know, it's not hard to make this thing, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of asked that before already, but I'm trying to phrase this in a way that you can actually answer it without having to dodge it. Earlier you said you had another product in the works.
Yeah.
Do you have a vague timeline?
We're hoping 2016. We're hoping, you know, maybe this time next year we'll be finally revealing what we've been working on all this time, because you know, you guys know it takes time. So this thing's been in development for years. It almost made light of day a little while ago, but it's just things weren't right. So hopefully this is the year that we're going to finally make a showing.
As long as you ship before Scala. Yeah.
Ouch. Wow.
Man, that was cool.
I can't
wait to see Scala. I'm busting at the chumps to see, because, you know, as a designer, there's not really an amazing tool out there. People have said Sketch and this and that, but for me, there's still nothing really out there.
No, I can't wait for Scala. Super excited. Yeah.
Sketch is pretty cool, I got to say.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. But I think, you know, the muscle memory of using Photoshop all these years is a little bit of a barrier. And then when you get past that barrier, it's very good in a lot of ways. But I think some of the fundamentals, it's just hard to kind of integrate into your workflow. We're trying to do it more and more because we're determined to kind of break away from that whole dependence on Adobe CC stuff.
Well, I think one of the brilliant things about the iPad and that, you know, you guys benefited from is that there was no standard.
Yeah.
You got to make it up. You didn't have to worry about people who wanted a particular shortcut key to do a particular thing. It was open pastures.
It's so true. It really was. And excuse the pun, a blank canvas, but it really was, because you jumped into the development of this product that's going to draw stuff, and there was just not much around. I think brushes and sketchbook were around, but we really didn't have to have a standard to try and, you know, build muscle memory, make sure that we've got the same shortcuts or anything like that. We can really start afresh.
Which I think is, I think that's kind of the story of the iPad Pro in a way, is that We are now catching up to a Mac, but it's a whole different ballgame at this point.
Yeah. It's funny because I think for us especially, we don't see the iPad Pro as another iPad. I think I was saying to Renee earlier on, this isn't just a, you know, from our point of view, it's not just another update. It's almost like an entirely new product category when you use it, and it's quite imposing when you first see it and you unlock it and it's so familiar. But then you start using it with a pencil and you're like, but this is not an iPad. This is something else. It really feels like that.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I think I'm super excited about the TV. But I this iPad Pro is like basically that's the future of personal computing as far as I can tell.
It feels like that, doesn't it? It really does feel like there's a turn happening here. Yeah.
Yeah. Sooner or later.
Yeah.
Probably sooner at the rate they're going, frankly.
Yeah. Every year, yeah. The iPad Pro 2 is probably going to be mental. So it's going to be an interesting couple of years ahead.
The thing I like about it so much is that on one hand, you do have people who are going to love it for productivity. You can have people who are going to love it for creativity. But you can also have people who, and I hate to keep harping on this, but I think it keeps getting overlooked, who just still can't use traditional computers. They just feel like dummies when they use them. But when they use this, it just feels natural. It feels accessible. It feels open to them. And they can do so much with it. And I think having an iPad that is bigger and more capable will make their lives better too.
That's a really good point. There's probably a lot of people, especially in that sort of baby boomer sort of segment, that are going to be far more comfortable using one of these things than a traditional PC. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All those iPad 2 owners waiting to upgrade still.
And those guys.
Yeah. Or iPad 3 owners who are just crying.
Yeah, or people with netbooks or Chromebooks or something who want something different than a traditional computer, who don't see Windows as an asset on a mobile device. Yeah,
no, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think inter-app communication or coordination, I should say, needs some kind of improvement. You know, I don't know if you need drag and drop.
Yeah, drag and drop between multitasking. Everyone, we can all see it.
Yeah.
They're going to do it. Surely they're going to do it.
Yeah, I don't know how, because it's a weird how do you do that without overloading an interaction, right? But
they do it in app, like in mail, you can drag and drop addresses between the different between CC and BCC and two, and you can do in calendar, you can drag appointments between days.
Yeah, it's just that. I mean, the way that you program these things, you can define how you're going to interact. The user is going to interact with your canvas, and things get weird.
Yeah.
If you start, I still think it's weird that you can do that five finger, like by default, you can do the five finger gesture on an iPad to switch apps, or four finger.
Yeah.
Because that's like, well, now I can't use four fingers in my app, like ever. If I've got a giant iPad Pro and I want a kids game and four kids are touching the canvas, and then they all happen to move in the same way and now they've switched apps.
Well, like, how many people were fruit ninjing into mail by accident?
Yeah.
So true. Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly losing that ability to use four fingers is like, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah,
because I mean, one less tool.
Yeah, well, they can track like 10 plus. The first one's got 10 at least, so it's way up there. But now, not so much because we've defined these gross gestures as gross meaning.
Yeah, and the top is notification center, the bottom is control center, the right now is multitasking with a multi-app multitasking.
Yeah, yeah, we opened with a blank canvas and we're slowly becoming a little bit confined, right?
Eminent domain, digital eminent domain.
Yeah. Ouch. God.
What's interesting about the 10-finger touch, though, is that on iPad Pro, you've got this kind of bigger screen. So you naturally, I found myself naturally using two hands more and more. And I wonder if there's something really cool with that. So, for instance, adjusting the size and opacity sliders whilst drawing on a desk, suddenly I'm sort of thinking, well, you do it in a different way. You kind of lay the iPad down. And then I was thinking there's something really cool about there's two hands here to do stuff with.
That is cool.
I think we're going to see some interesting stuff with that. Yeah. And I think if there was going to be a convergence, certainly with Mac and iOS, I would love to see some sort of touch interface for a Mac or some sort of, essentially a large screen with a touch interface. That would just be amazing. And I think two-handed interaction, that's something really cool that I don't think we've, you know, we have yet to really exploit. There's just so much there that could be cool.
Yeah, we're talking about GarageBand, two-handed GarageBand today on Twitter.
That could be cool.
That could be awesome.
It could be really cool.
Yeah. And I agree with you that I know people make fun of the idea that you're going to hold your arm out and touch stuff on the screen with a Mac. Well, don't do that.
Exactly.
You can add other stuff that, like, if I flick if I flick a window away, fine. Like, that's anyway.
Yeah, but I remember hearing the same sort of arguments with the iPod when people were saying, "Oh, there's going to be an iPod with a full touch screen," which of course became the iPhone. People say, "Oh, that would suck because you're going to get fingerprints all over it." But you're like, well, yeah, but it won't really matter. And sure enough, no one cares.
Yeah, I'm so on board with that. Like,
yeah,
stop being so negative and just
see the future. It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know what? That's a brilliant way to end this show. See the future. It's awesome.
Nice.
James, if people are interested in you, your work, your company, your Procreations, where can they go?
Procreate.si, and they can find not only what the product is all about, but also the community where everyone's talking about what's happening. Yeah.
And on Twitter, you are CUDA James. You mix things up.
Yeah. Someone already took the other one. But, I like to mix things up. Yes.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. And people really do check out the app. It's great. And you've made me excited for the future.
Yeah, Procreate was one of the apps that sold me on the iPad Pro the minute I started using it. I just, that and the pencil, I knew was just instantly fantastic.
That's very humbling to hear. Thanks, guys. It's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, man. So.
Yeah, it was. It was cool.